Pop Spotting 195.
Friday, January 13th, 2012.
Welcome to Pop Spotting. I'm Jen.
And I'm Ryan.
It's Feedback Friday, and this week we open on the big screen as we got a lot of thoughts on the girl with the dragon tattoo.
Happy New Year, Ryan and Jen, and to all your listeners. This is Cheryl in North Delta, British Columbia. Just heard your podcast on the girl with the dragon tattoo. Now, I'm someone who never read any of the books and never saw any of the Swedish movies. So maybe I'm not qualified to have an opinion, but I did see David Fincher's movie because I'm definitely a fan of his work, and I really, really loved it, you know, but I have nothing else to compare it to. I enjoyed the stylistic opening, and even though I guess, like you say, it didn't really match the rest, and I enjoyed the whole movie. Just it all seemed, the whole rendering seemed very stylistic. It was great. I don't know. I just thought the movie was riveting. I just was not bored for 1 second. I mean, it was long. It was 2 hours and 40 minutes, and I just was, you know, captivated by this story. And I loved Rooney Mara. Of course, I have nothing to compare her to either, but I thought, you know, like you say, she was so uninhibited. She was just absolutely fearless. So, I, you know, for me, it was a thumbs up. I thought it was great. Next topic, I decided to re-see The Descendants. I had expected so much the first time going in, and I was just really in the mood to see it again. And I, you know, I really liked it the first time, but I liked it even more the second time. I think each time I see it, I'll like it even more. Yeah, it was great. And the first time, I mean, I already loved Judy Greer and Beau Bridges, and of course the daughters were sensational, particularly the older daughter. But this time I had a lot more respect for George Clooney's work. And, yeah, I could really feel him this time, and I cried in the appropriate parts. And, you know, and I already loved this movie as far as how Hawaiian it was and the music. So that was really great. And then there was one more thing I was going to bring up. When I saw The Descendants yesterday, I went into one of these brand-new theaters here. I was wondering if other people are familiar with these theaters already. I never heard of this. It was a 19-plus theater, so I didn't even know what it was. It's very nightclubby. And, you know, there's like a special bar that you pass through, and you can have meals in there, and they want you to pay $7 more. They waived that for me because I didn't know anything about this. Anyway, I didn't like it, but that's because, you know, I'm an old fogey, I guess, and I just like things the way they were. So, I mean, I just like to see my movie, and I don't want to have a big meal in there. But anyway, I was just curious about any feedback about these 19-plus theaters or what else is going on in other parts of the world. Okay. Happy New Year again, and bye-bye.
Thanks for your call, Cheryl. Happy New Year to you, too. And a lot of good stuff there. The girl with the dragon tattoo, she liked it.
It's good to hear the perspective from somebody who went in cold without knowing any of the story. It gives us a different angle.
Absolutely. I mean, it was distracting for us to see Fincher's version, as great as it was, because we had the Swedish version in our heads. So at least one thumbs up there. As far as the Descendants, I need to see it a second time. I mean, it's certainly something I need to rewatch if I picked it as my top film of 2011.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we should.
Well, it's interesting, though, that she liked it better, because I've heard people go the other way, and those were a lot of the people that are from here, so I really want to see what effect it has me the second time around, and I, too, was really drawn by the other performances. I thought that George Clooney made a lot of room for them to shine, but maybe I can focus more on his performance as well. And finally, an idea for a type of movie theater. I guess it's new, where she's at a 19-plus theater, adults-only, alcoholic drinks and food.
Well, there's this place in Austin, Texas called the Alamo Draft House. It's
right.
Fairly famous, and I've always had this fantasy of opening up our own version of the Alamo Draft House. We'd call it the Alamoana Draft House.
Yes,
but I
exactly.
would, I mean, given the state of movies today, I think there really needs to be a place where we can show classics and marathon old movies and things like that.
Right. We have here, and I think most major cities have, like movie museums and classic theaters. I like the idea of the Ebert Center in Chicago and all the the cool stuff they do there, but, you know, kind of a movie theater that's more like a nightclub, more for grown-ups, and makes it more of an event to go out. I think that that's a much more, you know, compelling and innovative idea versus 3D everything.
Right, so, absolutely.
If you have something cool going on in your town as far as movie theaters are concerned, tell us about it. I mean, we just got the Crybaby matinees, you know, movie showings just for people with kids, so right. It's kind of the opposite of that. But yeah, I'd be kind of interested to hear what movie theaters and moviegoers are up to in other cities. But let's continue the Dragon Tattoo feedback.
Scott in San Francisco writes, I am with Cheryl. I haven't read the books or seen the Swedish version. Actually, I got to the movie 10 minutes late, so I missed the crazy opening sequence. But I love the movie. I didn't realize it had been 2.5 hours. I've downloaded the book now. Pop Spotting is once again making me read.
Well, yes. I mean, we know we need to read the books. You have it under the desk here. Mm-hmm. You're going to get around to it eventually. Interesting that he didn't feel it was long, because it was a film. It's a long film to me that did feel long. But wow, that opening sequence is remarked upon by everybody. So I think Scott might have to go back and check that out on his own. Matt Z in Connecticut wrote on Google+, I just listened to your two podcasts about The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. First, I must disagree that the USA version was a remake of the Swedish film. I feel it was an American adaptation of the book. I found the USA version to cover more of the book, which I really enjoyed as it added more to the characters on the screen. Overall, I thought the American film was stronger, but that does not take away from the Swedish version, which is good as well. If pressed, I'd say that I like the American film better.
I did too.
Really?
I did. I felt that there was a lot more attention paid to style and to detail. I thought Fincher really had a vision for the movie, and he really made it come to life.
Well, you know, I guess I can see that, because you do feel more of the artist's hands at work with the Fincher version, whereas I thought the Swedish version was a pretty straightforward way to depict the story from the books. Again, speaking from someone who's not read it, there was certainly a lot more, deliberate style in the Fincher version. I really like the Fincher version. I scored it well, but I also really felt that the bar was set high by the Swedish version for Fincher to blow it out of the water, and I just think he fell a little bit short of that. But good to hear. Who's up next?
Bianca writes on the blog, I read the books and saw the Swedish version. In my opinion, the Fincher version was far more faithful to the book, which is why I liked it better than the Swedish one. Yes, there were some things left out, such as his relationship with Cecilia, but I don't think it was of much consequence to the overall story, so I see why they didn't include it in either version. One thing that I wonder is why they changed the Harriet storyline in the end from what it actually is, and unless I missed something, they also never reveal in the Fincher version what was going on with the paintings. If I had already not been familiar with the material, I would have wondered where they were coming from. Overall, though, I love the movie, and I really hope they get to make the other two. I'm crossing my fingers for a Golden Globe win for Rooney Mara to keep the buzz going.
Well, we've got the Golden Globes coming up. I have great hopes for Rooney Mara, but I want to see an Oscar for her for
yes,
this performance.
I do too.
But yes, they made some changes, and we had to ask your mom, my mm-hmm. mother-in-law, you know, which version of the Harriet explanation, which version of this and that was more accurate to the book, because we hadn't read the book. I didn't find any of them really distracting, apart from the one that Bianca's talking about that we talked about, where they open with the painting thing and then they completely forget to close it. I am certain that that's on the cutting room floor just to save a couple of minutes there. But someone else who liked the American version better and certainly hopes that, Fincher's going to make the other two. An interesting thing there is that, you know, Rooney Mara and Daniel Craig are signed on with Sony to make the next two films, but it doesn't look like Fincher is officially committed to make the other two yet.
Yeah, there are rumors that he's really not interested in making the other two.
I hadn't read that. I know that he was going to make the 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea movie this year, and if Sony wants this out in 2013, he's going to have to find a way to do both at the same time. So I guess we're all waiting and seeing with Fincher. I do hope he makes the other two. We liked his sense of style, so what he does with the other two stories will be great, but before then, we will also have to watch the Swedish version of those other two books. Mm-hmm. Aaron on the blog writes, saw The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, just wanted to throw out my two cents. After having seen the original Swedish film first, then devouring the trilogy of books more than once, I felt this one was a must-see. It was nicely done, but overall I felt disappointed. I felt that Michael Nyquist fit the role of Blomqvist better. After reading the books, he surely didn't come across as a James Bond kind of guy, and Noomi Rapace owned Lisbeth for me. More than one reviewer has complained that Rapace was too attractive for the role, mm-hmm. which I can't agree with. It felt that she filled Lisbeth's skin perfectly. One of the main complaints that I read in the reviews was that the story was so big and sprawling, which it certainly was. But even even after trimming things down, the original Swedish films did a better job, I felt, of propelling the overall story than the Fincher version did. There were very few slow spots in the original movies, where it often felt like the new version dragged in places. The originals didn't feel like long movies, whereas the new version seemed to go on and on at times. The new version wasn't bad, but when it comes for a time for another rewatch, I'm confident that it will be subtitles again for me. One other thing that caught me was that the new version felt as if it was trying to end the story with this film. I certainly didn't feel as if there was more to come, and I guess I don't mind. The soundtrack was cool, though, when it wasn't too loud, and I totally agree with you guys about the opening. One of the people that I saw the new one with commented that he was waiting for Daniel Craig to point a gun at us through a pistol barrel by the end of the credits.
Yeah, I have to admit, I was too.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you felt that the story was wrapped up. Well, I did still feel like that Fincher left it open enough, but there was a question as to whether there would be more, you know, Fincher versions, because it only made $106 million worldwide, which is only a tiny bit more than it cost to make and market the film. So,
yeah.
But it does sound like Sony's on board to make the rest. There is more to the story, but it's good to hear from someone else and who here likes the Swedish version better.
Lou writes on the blog, "I've read all three books and watched all the Swedish movies. I love the books. I like but didn't love the Swedish movies. I was really glad when I heard Fincher was going to make an American version. I felt that the Swedish movies didn't get everything right. I wasn't pleased with the casting. I know some parts of the novel had to be left out to make the story fit into a movie, but I felt that they could have done a better job. Plus, there were some changes that had nothing to do with the timing that didn't work for me. One of the changes in the Swedish movie from the book you hit on while discussing the American movie, when Michael first meets Lisbeth. I think the reason you liked the American version better was that it was closer to the novel than the Swedish version. That was one of my favorite parts of the book. Both of the actresses who played Lisbeth did excellent jobs, but some of the credit has to go to how Lisbeth was written. She was such a compelling character. I felt that the American script did a much better job of demonstrating Lisbeth's intriguing nature. Just like you guys, I was surprised and pleased that the American versions weren't sanitized. Unlike Ryan, I didn't find the soundtrack obtrusive. Well, I hadn't heard anything about it till your podcast. After the opening credits, I didn't even notice it. I agree with the 8.5 you give this movie. I give the book a 9. The Swedish movie gets an 8. I really hope they can make the sequels."
Well, Lou here, a fan of the American version, and, you know, not much to disagree with there.
No, I actually agree with everything he says.
And that first encounter with Lisbeth and Mikhail, I think, was really key because Mikhail is much more aggressive there. And again, I think that's a major difference between Daniel Craig's interpretation and that of Michael Nyquist. Thanks for that, Lou. And now we'll move on to some television feedback. Yoda808 on the blog writes, "Great thoughts on both Once Upon a Time and American Horror Story. Though I wasn't able to keep up with your two previous American Horror Story podcasts, I did manage to finish off the season before this week's show. Like yourselves, I was definitely caught up in the last few episodes of the season. One of the things I liked about the show was that after a while, it wasn't really about the horror aspect and more about the people and characters in the house and their interactions. I'm also excited to see what the creators have in store for next season. I read that Entertainment Weekly article you mentioned, and I just love the fact that they're going to make every season different and revolve around a different location and theme, and with potentially some of the same cast members. I think it's a really refreshing take to have for a show, and definitely look forward to what they have in store for next season. On the Once Upon a Time front, I did have one point of contention with you guys, saying the show is taking too many elements from Lost. Isn't Lost inherently in the show's DNA, since the characters don't know that they're fairy tale characters? Maybe I misinterpreted what you guys said, but as far as the flashbacks and characters waking up go, seeing what happens when they realize their origins and memories and how that is dealt with was going to have to come up eventually. In any case, I think the show is great and definitely got sucked in after the first couple of episodes."
I agree. Lost is inherently in the show's DNA, and I like the shoutouts. I do, but there's a point where it stops becoming clever and starts getting distracting, and I just don't want it to get to that point.
Yeah, I just don't want to be taken out of this story to suddenly be thinking about, oh, there's Charles Widmore, or oh, there's, you know, an Apollo bar or something. I'm afraid that the next milk carton we see is going to have Walt on the side of it, but still definitely enjoying the show.
On that front, Liz emailed, "I just listened to your updated review of Once Upon a Time. I'm really glad you guys are liking the show, because I am too. I was a huge Lost fan, and I'm really enjoying the little nods to Lost in the show. I recently read on Entertainment Weekly's website that they cast Emily DeRavin for a future episode as Belle. I'm really excited about this because I loved Beauty and the Beast growing up, and I have to admit, the first season, Claire was one of my favorite characters. Can't wait to see what they do with her. Thanks, and keep up the good work."
Yeah, I mean, certainly there's going to be more of those crossovers. It's fun to think about what other actors might make it over onto the show.
Yeah, I can't wait to see that.
And we've also read said that Sage Brocklebank, he's a Buzz McNabb, that kind of dopey but adorable cop on Psych, is going to be...
What a name! He sounds like a Harry Potter character. I didn't realize that was his name.
Sage Brocklebank, yes. I think actually he should go by Buzz McNabb. But anyway, he's going to be on Once Upon a Time as well as Amy Acker, who you might know from a couple of Joss Whedon shows, Angel and Dollhouse. But yeah, if there's anything that I think Once Upon a Time is going to play with, is kind of bringing in familiar faces from elsewhere in the geek universe. Daniel on the blog weighed in saying, good thoughts. You're right. There are some cool small Lost shoutouts, but I'm glad it doesn't require having seen Lost to enjoy Once Upon a Time. However, I think a lot of podcasters are approaching Once Upon a Time too much with a Lost box. By the way, if you'd like a podcast about this great TV show, may I recommend my Once Upon a Time podcast?
You just did.
Absolutely. That's Daniel is with you know him on Twitter as The Ramen Noodle, but he also has his Once Upon a Time podcast at oncepodcast.com. But I think he's making a good point. At least, you know, as for all the shout outs that are there, all the little clues, you won't really miss anything if you hadn't watched Lost.
That's a good point, because they're really marketing it as from the producers of Lost. I'm wondering if people are seeing that, and all of the people who gave up on Lost for being so dense and so hard to follow, I wonder if they've not watched Once Upon a Time yet for fear that it's going to be the same thing.
Well, actually, that's true. If they say that this is like Lost, if that's how they were selling it, you might go, oh man, I remember Lost. Forget that. I'm not going to get into anything like that again. So It's a double-edged sword, but certainly if you want to focus more on that show, Daniel's got a podcast for you. On to another TV show.
Ralph writes on Twitter, I agree with the person who recommended Homeland. This show is among my top new shows for this season. For the last few seasons, I believe this show is to this decade what 24 was to the last decade, aka the immediate post-9/11 era. Instead of painting the world in such stark terms that 24 did and portraying Jack Bauer and his actions in similar ways, Homeland is much, much more nuanced. Characters are much less black and white as you get to know them as the season goes on. Homeland is much more realistic in that certain actions taken by the characters have consequences later on. The world is portrayed much more realistically in that the world is much more complicated and convoluted than 24 portrayed. I just have to say that any award nominations for this show as a whole for Claire Danes, Damian Lewis, and Mandy Patinkin are well-deserved, and any wins for them are very much justified.
Well, again, we're very curious about Homeland. It's a show that we're going to have to wait for it to come out on DVD. Mm-hmm. I'm also, you know, I'm really curious to see how they play off some of these things, because I am reading reports about it, I'm watching tweets about it, and there are certain plot twists that have developed in Homeland that I'm like, I don't know how they can sell that. I don't know how they could get there. And I think it comes down to how complex and nuanced all of these characters are. But Manila Raff there, a longtime listener of ours, a good friend, and someone else who's making us very curious about this Showtime series.
Absolutely. Well, I think we'll wrap up this edition of Feedback Friday with more music.
Hey, Ryan and Jen, this is Jeff Gentry with another installment of Jeff's Music Cues for Pop Spotting. I'd like to share with you about a group called Sojourn. They're based, I believe, out of the Nashville area, and they've got a couple albums out. The one I want to recommend is called The Water in the Blood. They've taken old hymns, I believe this one, this album is Isaac Watt hymns, and they've adapted them with new music, new styling, and this album contains, it's a real southern feel. They've got some songs that are southern rock, some that are country or bluegrass, some that are kind of a bluesy sound, and some that are a soul sound. But it's a unique take on all these old hymns. And it's just a neat CD. I got introduced to it by a group in our church doing a couple of the songs, and I just wanted to pass along. It's a unique take on some of those, and so check it out. The album is The Water in the Blood, and the group is Sojourn. Thanks, guys. Bye.
From within, but by-
that's pretty. The arrangement is beautiful. I love the sound of it. That's really nice.
You liked it?
I did.
Well, you know, I have to admit, if there's any genre of music, I mean, if you think I have a hard time kind of getting to understand and being open-minded about rap, I do probably have a natural aversion to Christian music or religious music in general because, I don't know, I mean, I guess that's the heathen in me coming out. But I do know that there is, you know, good Christian music. This reminded me of our friend Mitchell here mm-hmm. in Honolulu. We worked with him at UH Hilo in the newspaper there, actually.
Yeah.
And he would bring in CDs, all kinds of great music, not all, you know, Christian music, but he would slip one in every so often, and I would be the guy who asks, this is really awesome, what are we listening to? And then he would say, oh, this is my current Christian rock band. And that kind of taught me I needed to have more of an open mind. I mean, without the lyrics, I can see that song sticking in my head. Mm-hmm. That was the title track from the album and artist that Jeff was telling us about, Sojourn and the Water and the Blood. The album came out last year, 2011. You can find out more at sojournmusic.com. Now, of course, if you've got a music recommendation, you can play DJ here on Pop Spotting as well. Just send those in. Next week's Feedback Friday will include some of your picks from 2011, as well as feedback on Downton Abbey and other great stuff, including books. But we thrive on your feedback. We require it to survive. So please, whether you agree or disagree with what we say about movies, music, books, or whatever, please take the time to let us know and allow us to share your thoughts on our show.
There are many ways you can do that. You can leave a voicemail at 815-310-0808. You can email us at feedback@popspotting.net, or you can comment on the blog at popspotting.net.
You can also post your thoughts on our Facebook page. That's at facebook.com/popspotting. Or, of course, you can find us on Twitter at popspotting, at Hawaii, or at Mrs. Hawaii.
If you like podcasts as much as we do, we know sometimes it's hard to keep up with them all, and syncing your files to your phone can be a royal pain. Fortunately, to the rescue, there is Stitcher Smart Radio. It's a free app for iPhone, Android, and other smartphones that lets you easily stream the latest episode of your favorite podcasts, including Pop Spotting.
We now have a landing page at the Stitcher website, and if you use it to download your app, if you use it to share our podcast or like it, it will help our show immensely, so you can check that out at stitcher.com/popspotting. Tell your friends and bring them aboard. We'll be back soon with more Pop Talk. For now, we want to thank Dan Pashman of The Sporkful for making our theme song.
And thank you guys for listening to our show. For Pop Spotting, I am Jen.
And I'm Ryan.
Live long and prosper.
Hey, I like that. Aloha.